Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world, on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, here we are, the first month of the year of 2016, out the window and gone. 11 months of the year to go, whatever it may bring. It's now February, and we have some great shows coming up for you. Thank you very much for all of your emails. No shout-outs on this edition, but I want to make one little correction before we do anything. Mike Mosley, who listens to the show, really sorry that I got your email and your story mixed up with a story and an email communication from somebody in Japan. Mike, I'm really sorry about that. But you were the person who told me about somebody that you'd come across who had recollections of a previous era and falling from a plane. And as I said in the email that I sent you apologizing, and I'm doing it here publicly now, I would love to hear more about that story. Any stories that you have to tell, wherever you might be, would love to hear from you. You can go to the website, theunexplained.tv, the website designed, created, honed and maintained by Adam at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, and there you can send me an email. Please, when you do, tell me who you are and where you are and how you use that show, because I find that very useful and very interesting to know those things. And then tell me your story or make a guest suggestion. Got a big pile of those that I'm working through. And tell me where I'm going right or going wrong with this show, because, you know, we can always improve, and that is a fact. And thank you very much for all of your words recently. So many emails coming in. The show is doing so well. Thank you. If you'd like to make a donation to the show, you can do that at the same website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the PayPal link, and it's as easy as falling off a log, as my dad used to say, back in the day. On this edition of the show, we're going to talk to a man who is very different, I think, from the run of guests we've had in the past, but I think he's right up to the minute. Very contemporary theme, this, and it's the kind of stuff that I think somebody should be saying. Mark Devlin, British DJ, music journalist, has written a book, Musical Truth, and it claims to lift the lid on the entertainment industry and the way that, in Mark's words, we are being manipulated and controlled by it, and the way that the music has changed and it is not edifying, interesting for people, the themes that are being explored are not good. A lot of it is just not of the quality that it used to be, but I want to let Mark speak for himself. You're going to find a lot of this controversial stuff, and yes, I will ask him a few hard questions, and apologies if I do interrupt from time to time, but I think it's interesting, and I wanted you to meet Mark Devlin, because I think that the basis of what he's saying, somebody should be saying somewhere, and, you know, I'm glad that he is. So he's a British guest. He's going to be on The Unexplained very soon. Like I say, if you want to connect with me in any way, then go to the website, theunexplained.tv, and that's the place you can send me a message, guest suggestion, whatever from. Very, very busy few months coming up. More details about all of that coming soon. But let's get now to the guest on this edition, Mark Devlin, DJ, music journalist. Mark, thank you very much indeed for coming on The Unexplained.
Good to be on, Howard.
Mark, I don't know where to begin with you, because this is such a fascinating topic, and it definitely is topical as a topic, if you pardon the expression. Talk to me first of all about you.
Yeah, well, it is difficult to know where to begin. I won't give you my entire life story, because we'll be here all day, but I'll just give you the potted version. I've been a radio and club DJ for the last 25 years. And for the first 20 of those, I just kind of went through the motions and did everything that was expected of you as a DJ, worked on various radio stations. I was fortunate enough to DJ in clubs all around the country and in different countries around the world. And in 2010, at the tail end of a long period of reading, reflecting, musing on the big questions in life and researching what was really going on in the world, I had what I guess you would call something of an epiphany or an awakening, where I came to an understanding that this world is nothing like we spend our lifetimes being programmed and conditioned to believe it is. And I came to understand that the world is not run by the people and the institutions that we're told it is, and that the truth of the matter is that when you delve beneath the surface, you find that there are a whole different bunch of individuals and organizations that are pulling the strings of literally every aspect of daily human life.
The last person to say similar words to me was David Icke, and I've known David Icke, as you may know David Icke, for a few years. We both know this is not a popular view, is it?
It's not popular, it's controversial, but it's the truth, and it's provable in so many ways. And so many people are coming to this understanding now, begrudgingly, because when you come to an acceptance of the fact that you've been lied to about pretty much everything all through your life, it's very difficult for people to come to terms with, because you have to acknowledge that effectively you've been made a mug of. Now, I don't like being mugged off. I don't take kindly to people treating me as a chump. And so when I discover that I've been misled and deceived in that way, I'm not happy about it. And I want to get right down to the truth and work out how I was duped as quickly as possible.
How much of this epiphany that you had, you say you had, came to you through the things that you've read? And maybe you'll talk to me about who you've read and your own direct experience, because you are a disc jockey, you are a music journalist, you know the media, you know the way the music business works. So I'm just keen to know how much of it is you and how much of it you've sort of drunk in from other sources.
Well, I had my intuition sparked, that inner knowing where you don't need to rely on written facts and information and stuff, that there is a certain point where you are able to intuit information from creation, from the universe. It's that innate knowledge that we all have if we learn how to tune our consciousness into it.
Whoa, hang on. You're able to intuit information and knowledge from the universe. Run that past me again. How does that work?
It works because we all have an infinite connection with the universe, with creation. We're all aspects of it. We're aspects of universal, eternal consciousness. That is our true nature. And that is part of the deception that we've been misled into thinking that we're anything but that. But that's the truth of the matter. And this intuitive knowing, it needs to be sparked from somewhere. It needs a kickstart. And so it was information which enabled me to start searching and start opening up my consciousness to understand these things. And so that was various books and various authors that I'd got into. And by 2010, I was at the tail end of a period of reading authors like David Icke. Absolutely. I did read his books, and they truly opened my eyes to so many things. But it was also the influence of my dad, who for many years was an open-minded, critical truth seeker. And he was reading books by the likes of Eric von Daniken back in the late 60s, who was proposing some very controversial theories of the time, very contentious stuff concerning the origins of humanity. But it was my dad that just encouraged me to be open-minded. Don't be afraid to step outside the box. Don't be afraid of being different to everyone else, because maybe everyone else has got it wrong. Just maybe everyone else is being misled. And maybe the way to go is to think for yourself and search always and ask big questions.
Now, look, Mark, just out of interest, when you're disc jockeying, when you're playing for an audience, not when you're on the radio, but I know from experience, and not very much of it, that there are times when you can be in that situation. The music is playing, it's heavily compressed, so it's pumping. The room is filled with people. It's dark. The light is spinning round there. And you can almost, and I'm not talking about experiences with substances here, although we know that some of that does fuel those experiences for some people who want to go that way. But you can reach another stage, and you can suddenly feel yourself being a little more aware of things outside yourself. Is this the sort of process that you've been involved in?
Not really personally. I think that kind of process does come with various mind-altering substances, which, as you say, are prevalent in the clubbing scene. It's not something I've ever felt the need to do myself. I've always just been able to enjoy the music. You definitely go through a process when you are DJing to a large number of people, and you are able to very much control the mood and the atmosphere and the emotion in that room. And you're very much able to express yourself through the music that you play and the way you sequence it and the way you make it flow. And you can definitely feel the energy of the crowd changing when you do it.
And a lot of the music itself, the beat of the music, the way that you can sequence it together to, to beat match and make a continuous whole out of the thing. A lot of that is very, very hypnotic.
Yeah, I mean, DJs often talk of taking you on a journey, which has become a bit of a cliche, but that is what you're doing, really. That's what a good DJ is doing, is absolutely in control of their music selection and is understanding and reading the mood and the emotion of the crowd and taking them somewhere, on an unseen level. And that ties into what's being done to the music in these times, really, which is a subject I get into big time in the book that I've got coming out shortly, mm-hmm. and which I've got into in public talks and radio shows before. The way the music is produced and the sort of stuff that's going into it now is very much part of an agenda, because it is understood by these forces that are controlling the entertainment industry, the enormous power that music has to affect mood and emotion and affect people's consciousness.
All right, well, look, there's a great paragraph in the blurb for your book. We call it blurb in the UK, publicity material. Top paragraph says, to most people, the music industry represents a source of harmless fun and entertainment. Beneath the glossy veneer, however, lies the devastating truth of who really controls these institutions and the deeply malevolent agendas for which they're being used. That is a big, heavy paragraph, and it's only two lines of it, but that hits you right in the solar plexus. Now look, we both know the entertainment industry, and truly, I've seen it all over the years. And I've known people who've been motivated by money, their own self-aggrandizement, and all the rest of it. I've seen every aspect of human nature. But I honestly don't think, in all of those years of coming across mostly very well-motivated people who just want to communicate, that's what they were born to do, and I understand that, and one or two people who are, you know, not so nice, I don't think I've ever come across anybody who has an agenda to manipulate the way people think. They've wanted to manipulate people to make some money off them, but not to control the way they think necessarily. Why am I wrong?
Because it's going on all through human society at every level. And what happens in the music industry is just a microcosm of the overall picture, the macrocosmic picture of what's going on in everyday life on every level. It's all to do with mind control, social engineering, and the engineering of consent. And this happens through television, of course, big time, through Hollywood movies. It happens through the mainstream media and the news stories that we get on, you know, all the big media, corporate-owned media outlets, and of course the BBC. It's happening through what politicians tell us. It's happening through what the educational institutions, universities, colleges and such tell us. Mm. It's happening at every level. You know, mind control is everywhere. Why would it be any different in the corporate-owned mainstream music business? Mm. And so this is what I've studied as a specialist area over the past 5 years.
No, but you've made a very big assumption. You've assumed that mind control is rife in the mainstream media. Now, you know, I know a little bit about you. I think you know a little bit about me. My background is mostly news. I've worked on news desks, and I really have never gone into a news shift, either wanting to shape the agenda myself or having anybody pressure me to do a particular thing because it will have a particular result. The news is the news, and you just report it. It's only a question of how you do it.
Well, that's because the individuals that are controlling news output are operating from behind the scenes, largely. They're not publicly seen. And so when you get newsreaders and journalists such as yourself and your peers, you are taking news that has been handed down from higher sources. But a lot of this news is cooked up and engineered behind the scenes by, as I say, individuals whose names we don't necessarily know.
All right. Well, listen, I will buy one thing. There is a trend, and it started probably 25 years or so ago, so it's lasted the entire length of my career. More and more news is derived from fewer and fewer sources, so a lot of it comes off the wires. A lot of it is generated by the same few television outlets, mostly, whose material is reprocessed for radio and elsewhere. Absolutely. So I think the number of core sources for news, where it comes from, are reducing. So if somebody wanted to have control over those core sources, the kind of thing that when I'm on a news desk shift, I won't see, and the people above me won't see, but maybe the people in a stratospherically high level will see. You know, maybe that is a way that that can happen, because there are so few ways for us to get the news, even though, conflicting with that, we have a multiplicity of things to listen to and stations to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the figures are ridiculous when you get down to it. The major news corporations are owned ultimately by an absurdly small number of associations, organizations. It's like 5 or 6 throughout the whole of the US. And for many years in the UK, pretty much all the mainstream news that people had access to were coming via either Reuters or Associated Press. And I forget which way around it was, but one of those incorporated the other, absorbed the other. And when you get right down to it, you find that both of them were ultimately controlled by the Rothschild family. So it's a very small a very limited source where all this news is coming from. And when you go to your news agent on any given day and you look at all the so-called newspapers on the stand there, you notice that pretty much all the same stories are being reported by all these newspapers. Now, if it really were the case that journalists were going out there and uncovering stories and getting right to the root of these things using their own resources and, you know, their own freedom to go wherever the news takes them, wouldn't you expect to see a wildly differing array of stories? You know, one newspaper would have uncovered one story, another newspaper would consider something else worthy of being all over their front page, and yet you see the same stories plastered over the same eight newspapers pretty much every day.
Okay, well, but if there was a big agenda, let's just look at this last week or so. A big story's been the pitifully tiny amount of tax that Google has paid in the UK. Just for our American listeners who may not have seen this story, £130 million, which is approximately, what, $200 million, for a 10-year period when they made billions and billions of pounds or dollars, whichever way you look at it. Now, that story is a story that if somebody was manipulating the agenda, it would be manipulated down or off the agenda. But it's in the news as we record this. It's been in the news for the last 4 or 5 days. If there was a big grand plan to control stuff, you wouldn't get stories like that, would you?
Some stories are put out there to give the impression that the news is doing a fair, balanced job of letting people know what's really going on in the world. They will throw a few scraps out there like that to have that illusion, to give that impression. But where is the coverage of stories that really would be in the public interest? Where is the real journalism? Where is the real investigation going on? There have been so many false flag terror events. I mean, we're getting into a proper minefield territory here, but it's absolutely provable that things like 9/11, 7/7, the Sandy Hook so-called school shooting, the Boston Marathon bombings, and so many other events were all staged in some way. The mainstream media is absolutely controlled in terms of everything it puts out there. If you want to get down to real truth, you have to turn off the TV, stop reading newspapers, purely because they're all controlled by these same sources, this very limited number of sources, as we just covered. And you have to start doing alternative independent research and going to sources that don't have these corporate interests and that aren't controlled by these same corporations. That's where you find real investigative journalism. That's where you really get down to the truth. And there have been so many independent researchers that have proven beyond any reasonable doubt that these events that I just mentioned did not happen in the way that we were told officially that they did. Many of them involved actors, crisis actors, playing the parts of many of these supposed victims. Many of them were just straight rigged up and concocted. Many of them were done on film sets. I realise how shocking and outrageous.
You're going to make a lot of people very angry about some of those things. They're big claims, Mark, to make, because, you know, think of the families of people involved in situations and events like that. Think of the people involved in trying to deal with them from a security perspective, the police, the security services who protect us day by day. You know, to say that a large proportion or a proportion of these things are faked up, put up jobs that are done for reasons that are not the reasons we are told they are. Those are huge claims. You know, how have you come to be convinced of that?
It's not just me saying it. There are a whole load of researchers out there that have delved into the evidence and looked at the facts and have come to these conclusions. And as I say, if anyone chooses to do the research through their own free will, they will find this stuff online. The reason it's online is obviously because mainstream newspapers and TV and radio stations won't touch it for obvious reasons. I realize that people will find it shocking. I realize that people might be offended the first time they hear it, but truth is truth. It is what it is.
Well, hang on. I understand this. And look, I'm sympathetic to the, you know, from the standpoint, the position that you're in. Okay, I'm sympathetic to it. So please don't think I'm not. I'm not the voice of the establishment here. But to think that everything is not as it is presented in the mainstream media. Now, look, I'm no great defender of the mainstream media. That's why I'm doing this. But to say that a lot of the truth you'll find online, I'm not sure. I mean, look, when I'm researching this, I read some stuff that opens my eyes and convinces me that, you know, in a lot of cases in this world, to do with governmental things and what have you, we are not entirely told the truth, or we are misled, or we get a version of the truth that isn't very clear. It's a bit murky. but I read an awful lot of trash. The reason is that anybody can write something. Anybody can do a video these days. Anybody can put themselves out there. And are you saying honestly that you can take a lead from some of that stuff?
It's true that anybody can post anything online that they choose to, and it's true that there's a whole load of trash and garbage on the internet. Absolutely. You can watch some YouTube videos and it's pretty clear that somebody is just ranting and raving and there's no foundation to anything that they're saying. But mixed in with all this stuff, there is truthful information. And so it's a case of being very discerning and learning to become disciplined in sorting the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And the more you get into this process of seeking truth, the more you come to trust certain sources, the more you come to trust certain researchers, you find that certain researchers and commentators back up each other's information, even though they're coming at it from different perspectives or different parts of the world or whatever. So it is a process of being sensible, using your intuition and discerning the information and trying to get a grasp on what is disinformation, what is misinformation, and what is the truth. You know, it's a difficult process, but you either want the truth and you either object to being lied to and deceived the whole time and resolve to do something about it, or you just allow yourself to be lied to and manipulated for the rest of your days. And the latter is exactly what those who are controlling all aspects of this world are relying on. That is exactly the response they want from the general public, to think, oh, well, we can't possibly know the truth, so why even look for it? Let's just carry on the way we were.
I have certain views, but I am a bit of a seeker after truth, and I'm the guy who asks the questions, really. I try and stand in the middle as far as possible. Some things I do have a view on, and I do let it be known. Your views are very strong and very clear. How can you work as a DJ, working for big organizations, how can you work for radio stations holding these views? And now you're going even more public with this book that you're doing. Isn't that going to make you somebody who is going to be very difficult for these organizations to employ?
Yeah, it is. And I've had to let a lot go. I've had to, I'm doing far fewer DJ gigs than I did before. That's a conscious decision on my part. It's mainly down to what's happened to the music, to be honest, because I have no interest in playing what passes for these genres that I used to be associated with, because the music has changed so much that I just don't want to be a part of putting it out there, of promoting it, you know. I don't have a day job. I've not had one for many years. I'm self-employed. I do various different things, but I could never work for a corporation again. First of all, I'd never want to. But secondly, with the views that I put out there publicly, I understand that I would be of unemployable status to a great many organizations.
Do you, as a DJ, do you work under your own name?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, and has it given you any problems? You said you lost some work, but have you lost DJ gigs specifically?
Not really, because the way I put myself out there as a DJ, it's very limited now. I do far fewer gigs than I did before. And as I say, that's mainly a conscious decision. But when I do go out there and play music, it's me expressing myself as a DJ, and whatever views that I hold outside of that are left outside of the gig, you know. But then on top of that, I do my podcast and I do radio shows and public talks, and I've got the book coming out, and that's the other aspect of me expressing myself the way I feel I need to and saying some things that I feel need to be said. If people have a problem with my views and what I have to say about things, then it is what it is. I'm not going to spend any time worrying about it. I let go a few years ago of any fear of what people might think of what I say, because I came to realize that what you get in return for censoring what you say and modifying your behavior to suit other people is precisely nothing. You get no value out of it at all. So why then would you do it? This is a big one for people to overcome, because people do worry about what other family members might think if they come out and say certain things. They do worry about what the guys down the pub might say, or the people at work, or their brother or sister or their partner or whatever.
Well, but in your case, what do they all say, Mark?
Well, as I mentioned, my dad is pretty much with me on these things. We're on the same page. He's the guy that kind of inspired me to take an open-minded approach to life. Other family members are not quite on the same page, shall we say. And it's the same with certain friends as well. But like I say, I'm not going to not say things I feel need to be said for fear of what other people might think. It's a big one to overcome, but once you do, it's very liberating, let me tell you. You know, you feel truly free. You can express yourself the way you are meant to, as a sovereign free spirit, and you're no longer restricted by, you know, these aspects of society that are imposed upon us.
But when people put a contrary point of view to you, like those members of the family or whoever, friends, do you take it on board? Do you listen? When they say, come on, Mark, you're going a bit too far here, it isn't quite as staged as you say it is.
I'll listen to what they say, but in 99% of cases, when people come to you with comments like that, they're basing their viewpoint on what they've picked up from what the government has told them, or what they've heard on the evening news, or what they've read in a newspaper.
And they might say to you that you're basing your viewpoint on what you've read on the internet.
I am, but I'm basing my viewpoint on an eclectic variety of sources, many different researchers that don't have any corporate affiliations. They don't have any ulterior motives in coming out and saying the stuff that they say. In most cases, they've got a lot to lose. It's the same thing as my situation. You know, they're not going to get jobs anymore. They've been ridiculed. They've been scoffed at. They've maybe been ostracized by members of their family for stuff that they've come out and said. So they've got no ulterior motive for coming out and saying this stuff. You know, they're saying it because it's pure truth and it's based on research and evidential facts that they've uncovered. And so I take a wide variety of these sources and consolidate this information to come to these conclusions. But there's a very large number of people now around the world that are waking up to these truths, and they're understanding just how we've been systematically lied to for so long, and they're resolving to not be taken in by these deceptions anymore.
Well, listen,
it's a very growing thing.
You and I are completely in agreement about that. The one thing that we can say in this modern world where we have the internet and we have this great freedom is, yes, there is the freedom to write garbage on the net and to mislead people, but there is also the freedom for people to question. And if you encourage people to do that, then I think you're doing a good thing. Before we get into the specifics of the music, you DJ, you have issues which we'll get into about the music. Doesn't that conflict you?
Well, it would conflict me if I was still going out there and playing the music that, you know, the very music that I'm exposing and complaining about in my book. Historically, I've been a hip hop DJ and I've played various forms of black music. So it's hip hop, R&B. I played soul, funk, disco, UK garage, reggae, all that sort of stuff. But primarily, I've been known as a hip hop and R&B DJ. And the sort of music that passes for so-called hip hop and R&B these days bears absolutely no relation to what went before and is entirely unrelated to the foundation of these genres. What is getting put out there now is artificial, watered down, absolutely controlled by the corporations, and it's completely devoid of any kind of spirit or soul or humanity. It's just dead music, as far as I'm concerned.
So do you go along with the view, Mark, that some American talk show hosts I've heard put, and I think maybe the likes of Alex Jones might say, but I'm not here to speak for him, that music you're talking of is designed to dumb people down?
Absolutely. That's the way things have come around to. That's what things have come around to in these times. Over an extended period, those genres have been hijacked and they've been systematically sent down a certain route. And I've traced and tracked this over the course of the past 20 years. Because honestly, if you want to go back to when mainstream hip-hop had any kind of meaning to it and any kind of energy and any kind of spirit, then you've got to go back to the mid-90s. And I would say 1997 is the year where it started to go down the wrong path. So we're talking 20 years, effectively. And I know a lot of young fans of hip-hop and R&B today would argue with me on that one, and they would hold up the likes of Lil Wayne and Drake and Nicki Minaj and all these other people that are the high profile acts of today and say, oh no, these are great artists, they're expressing themselves, and how can you say that about them? Well, the point is, I come from an era and a generation where I can remember better times and better days, and where I've been able to trace this downward spiral of the music and the culture. You know, someone of 18, 20 years of age today is not going to have that kind of heritage and foundation to compare things to.
But that's just what a lot of us say, isn't it? We just say the music today is not as good, and I think it's demonstrably not really as good. That's a broad brush sweeping statement that I've just made, but a lot of it is not as good as it used to be, and a lot of that is simply down not to the fact that anybody's manipulating anybody else or there's a big agenda. It's just that a lot of it is sort of lazy, manipulative, and derivative. You know, there's very little originality.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. And of course, I'm conscious of the fact that if you speak to a dude that was young in the 1960s and remembers the hippie era and the Beatles and, you know, all of that, they're going to say, oh, music was so much better in the 60s. And, you know, you cats that are listening to music from the 80s, you don't know what you're missing. And then you speak to somebody slightly younger that remembers the 1980s and they'll say, oh, the 80s were the best. That was a fantastic era. You know, that the 2000s can't touch that. So it's a generational thing. And of course, people have a nostalgic value connected to the music that they grew up with, and they're going to defend that purely because of that nostalgia. But we have a generation now that's being raised on the sort of toxic garbage that's being put out there. And I'm conscious of the fact that in sort of 15 or 20 years, guys of my sort of age and generation are going to be off the scene, and we're not going to have any kind of voice. And those that are listening to the music and those that are running the industry are going to be those that were raised on the sort of stuff that's around at the moment.
So it's a self-fulfilling culture then. It's a big spiral.
It's something that happens generationally over cycles of time. Yeah. And it's planned for, and they allow for that.
It's planned for.
Well, these controllers that we're talking about, those that control the entertainment industry and those that control all these other aspects of human life that I've mentioned, they play the long game. They really do. You know, they've got great patience, which I personally lack. So it's very difficult for me to relate to that. But they do plan their moves years and even decades in advance. And there's evidence to show that they do just that. So they're looking 20, 30, 40 years ahead at any given point and planning the way that they're going to take society. And we can see that play out in so many ways now in so much of what's happening.
All right. Well, let's be specific about the music. And I don't want to slag off particular artists here because therein lies all kinds of problems. And in a way, it's not really fair. We're talking about the generalities of the thing. You say there's a big plan. Now, when I listen to the music, I agree with you. I think there was a big change that happened, and that change started happening in the back end of the 1990s, and once we hit 2000, something huge happened. It was like we woke up, and everything had changed. You know, my beef with a lot of the... Not a lot of. Let's be fair. Come on now, Howard. Fairness. My issue with a certain amount of this stuff is that it promotes bad attitudes. It's you know, bigging up the idea of being violent, of not treating women well, and some of these things are allowed to pass, and they get in the mainstream. You hear them on hit records, and I wonder to myself, how on earth has that been allowed to happen? Now, I don't know whether that's a cultural thing that's going on there, or whether that is, as you are saying, somebody's actually sat down and said, this is the way we're going to go.
Yeah. If you listen to hip-hop and R&B output, just to stick with that genre for a minute, over the past 20 years. I mean, obviously, there's underground music still being made. There is meaningful, conscious stuff being put out there. And this is what I highlight on my radio shows now. And this is what I choose to play. I want to be a conduit for that sort of stuff. But if all you ever do is listen to what's on Radio 1 and Capital and all these mainstream stations and what gets played on MTV, the only lyrical content that you're going to have had access to over the past 20 years, pretty much, with very few exceptions, is artists talking about partying, having a good time, getting drunk, having promiscuous sex with as many people as possible, doing drugs, driving fast cars, buying material black brands, getting the latest iPhone, gold chains, champagne, rims on your car, girls with fat asses in the club, you know, literally with very few exceptions.
But of course, the Rolling Stones in the 1960s, you know, the Beatles were saying, I want to hold your hand. The Rolling Stones were not exactly saying, I'd like to pop down to the library and have a coffee with you, were they?
Well, they weren't, but they still made some very interesting records. Even if you look at things like Sympathy for the Devil, I mean, obviously there's some satanic overtones to that, and it's a pretty dark track, but at least they were making music that made people think and talk about stuff, and at least there was some variety to it. Artists now are just sticking to these same corporate templates and blueprints that are laid out for them by the corporations that control them, and there's absolutely no kind of maverick spirit there. There are no artists expressing themselves independently. independently, creatively, individually. I mean, we lost David Bowie the other week, we're told, who was...
Wait, excuse me? You're not one of these people who subscribe to the fact that David Bowie actually has just sort of taken retirement.
Anything is possible, Howard. You come to understand that anything is possible.
Well, I think you and I may diverge there. You must have heard, as some of us in the media heard a couple of years ago, I heard that he was not very well, and somebody said David Bowie has cancer. And like most of us, I kept quiet about that. I'm not sure that I can believe anything other than what we were told happened there. But, you know, that's a separate point. It's a side alley. What we're saying, though...
Let's not get into the specifics of Bowie, but I was just using him as an artist to point out that, you know, he's a dying breed, a maverick artist that is able to express himself in a fascinating, endless array of ways. Where are his like now? You know, who can honestly hold up any mainstream A-list artist now and say that they... compared to the likes of Bowie in terms of creativity.
Isn't that a different thing, though? Isn't that, coming back to the point that I made there and that other people would make, that simply it's about people being derivative? It's the bosses of the music business who want a quick bang for the buck. There isn't the money to invest in new talent in the way that there used to be. So they want a quick bang for the buck. The technology makes it all very easy to go and create stuff. You don't have to work as hard, perhaps, to do that. I know I'm being really controversial here, and people are going to email me about this, but it seems to me that it is easier than perhaps it was for Brian Wilson to go into Western Studios in California and do all kinds of manipulation with sound. It's easier today because you can do it at home. I could do it, you know, I could do it in my apartment these days. It just makes the whole process easier. The people who run the music industry want a big bang for a buck very quickly so that they can get nice and rich. That's how it works. There's no agenda there. It's just, it's commerce.
That's certainly an aspect of it, and the corporations are clearly interested in making money as quickly as possible, and that's why they roll out pre-prepared templates and blueprints and such and get all their artists to conform to them. It's a very easy way of churning stuff out, like, you know, dog food at a factory on a conveyor belt. You know, that's the way these songs are coming across now. That is an aspect of it, and the corporations will never miss an opportunity to make a quick buck. But there is an agenda that lies beneath that, which is all about mind control and shaping the social viewpoints of large numbers of people. And it's very dark in its nature, and it plays out in so many ways. There are so many aspects to it. I mean, we can go into any one of these individual aspects as you choose, but it is multi-layered. And it's all about keeping people distracted from things that really matter in life. They don't want people asking the big questions. They don't want people looking too much into how corrupt our politicians are and why they're always waging war on some foreign nation over some BS cooked up excuse of a reason. They don't want people looking into the true nature of the establishment and how sick and depraved they are in their activities. They don't want people looking at the ways in which we're being constantly manipulated and taxed and, you know, screwed over. They just want people distracted, kept busy with their jobs, kept busy with the latest iPhone or the latest gadget or the latest technology, worrying about what their favorite celeb is up to, Snapchatting and Instagramming here, there and everywhere, and just taking whatever they're fed, watching rubbish TV, watching the X Factor, you know, catching the latest download, whatever. And that's what all this stuff is designed to do, just keep people distracted, keep them cut off from their true nature as well, their true spiritual nature, just making us feel like we're of this material world and there's nothing more to it, that there's no consciousness about ourselves that we can spend time exploring. You know, we're just here to work and consume and die. Mm. That's the viewpoint that they want. And the entertainment industry just plays its part in reinforcing that agenda.
All right, two things. Thing number one, in the 60s, what's the difference between, say, 1967, 68, and somebody sitting back and turning up Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by the Beatles and not bothering to watch Walter Cronkite's coverage of the war in Vietnam? What's the difference between the music today diverting people's attention from the important stuff, and then what's different now?
Well, only the methods, really, and the fine detail, and the names, the names and the details have been changed, but the agenda is still the same. That's a fascinating period to get into, that late 60s era, the counterculture, so-called hippie era, you know, anti-establishment stuff. All the music that was coming out on both sides of the Atlantic from the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd and people like that in England, and then all the artists that came out of the Laurel Canyon area of Los Angeles at that time as well. And it all tied in with the Vietnam War. It all tied in with the explosion of LSD and all these big festivals that were occurring in the United States, and the whole scene that was growing up out of Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. All these things kind of coincided. There was also the astrological age of Aquarius, which was being spoken about at that time as well, adding a kind of spiritual, metaphysical aspect to it. So it all merged together to make for quite a fascinating period.
Right. So I completely understand what you're saying. So you're saying that that kind of stuff, even if you did use it to escape from the realities and you were encouraged to, at least it was feeding your mind. The stuff today is not feeding your mind.
I have more affection for that type of music, and I can understand why people were kind of seduced by it in that era, in the late 60s, than the sort of stuff that's around at the moment. Maybe I'm getting old. Maybe it's my age. maybe I'm just cynical.
Oh, well, me too. And I said there were two things. The second thing is that, you know, there is this torrent of stuff now. Reality TV shows, a lot of which I have to say, and I really do try to like them, but a lot of them I have to turn them off because I think they're just garbage and trash. But then maybe I am old. And the preponderance of music and stuff to divert people. It's much greater now. It's much faster. There's more of it because we're all connected. We're all online. We can all access everything in the snap of a finger like that. If that is the situation, if people are being fed all of this trash, you know, I would like to use another word, but, you know, I try not to say crap on this podcast. What can we do about it then? If everybody is so dumbed down, everybody's been so diverted to an agenda, what on earth can we as ordinary people do other than ask those questions that I mentioned before?
You can unplug from it all if you choose to. It's all down to free will. Any one of us has the opportunity to just disassociate ourselves from all this mind-numbing, toxic garbage anytime we choose. You don't have to watch TV. You know, some very strong advice would be just throw the TV out and you prevent yourself being mind-controlled with all this garbage that is being put into your mind. And you don't have to listen to the music that the corporations are putting out there, these A-list artists. And it's really, you know, at any given time, it's sort of 20 or 30 artists that are being promoted, and you hear their tunes day in, day out on the radio and on MTV and such, and it's just these select few. You don't get to hear the vast array of other stuff that's out there.
Well, isn't that just the way the music business works, though? You know, when I was younger than I am today, you know, we had the Bee Gees putting out releases, there were a few soul acts, there was the Heatwave, and, you know, all of those people at the back end of the 70s and into the 80s, and Christopher Cross was in the charts. It seemed to me that there were about 40 people who were core acts. There was Chris Rea putting out some good rock music, and Springsteen was out there. You see, I'm sounding very wistful about remembering it all, aren't I, really? But, well, you know, what's the difference then?
Well, no difference, really. They've always selected whichever artists are the flavor of the month, I guess, and put them out there. But my point is, you can be discerning, and you can go to different sources for your music. There's a whole load of wonderful, meaningful, conscious stuff out there that's still being made that you're never going to get to hear if you only stick to these same radio stations and these same, you know, outlets. If you choose to go searching for it, you can uncover a great amount of stuff that really speaks to you and really resonates with you if you're a truth-seeking individual and if you're a critical thinker. And there's music that articulates so much of what's on people's minds today and gives these alternative viewpoints and gets down to the truth of the matter in so many things.
You're asking people to run away, though, aren't you? You're asking people to run away from it all, whereas where the point of agreement with you and I would be, you know, shouldn't we be asking people to stand up and say, I don't want this stuff anymore?
You can make that kind of statement to the corporations if you choose to. It's going to take large numbers of people kind of uniting all on the same page to make that statement meaningful enough for them to take notice of. I'm just inviting people to make a personal free will choice on behalf of themselves to be more discerning in what they seek out and what they choose to listen to.
And I suppose in so doing, they will actually have an impact by making a choice, by choosing not to consume the other stuff, and by consuming better stuff, then they have stood up.
The corporations will continue to attempt to ram down the throats of the people that material that they've chosen to get out there, that they've decided they want to get out into the public. So, I mean, look at record sales now. There are virtually no record sales since physical copies on vinyl and CD were replaced by downloads. How much money are the corporations really making out of so-called sales, so-called selling of music? They're not. You know, most of their income now comes from ancillary merchandise, T-shirts and ticket sales for live gigs and drink sponsorship deals and trainer sponsorship deals on behalf of the artists. There's very little income that's actually coming from sales. So you can't even say that by withdrawing your sales for certain artists' music, it's going to make an impact on the corporations, because they're making their money from these other things and they'll continue to do that. So you've just got to decide whether you want to make this individual decision for yourself and, you know, not adhere to all this corporate stuff that we're getting shoved down our throats. I'm just inviting people to make those decisions for themselves.
Puts you in a really difficult position, though, doesn't it, Mark? Because most people work very hard. These days, you know, a lot of us don't get paid fantastically well. In real terms, a lot of us are worse off than we were 20 years ago. Life is hard. You come home, you want to turn something on that will take your head away from all of that stuff. And you're saying that people should think beyond that. People in their millions are not going to listen to you, are they?
Probably not. Probably not. But like I say, it's down to each individual's own discernment and their own choice as to whether they choose to go down an independent, sovereign kind of route like that or not. You know, some people, it seems, are cut out for seeking alternative truth and going wherever the truth takes them. And other people, it seems, are cut out and built for a life conforming to corporate templates and mainstream stuff. Each individual is different.
Okay, well, I don't know what to take from that. That sounds to me like a very pessimistic view of the world. That kind of says we're all going to hell in a handcart, and you know, there will be a few of us who are a little more enlightened. End of story.
It's not intended to come across like that. To really get into this subject area, we have to get into some very philosophical kind of otherworldly realms, and I think that's probably beyond the scope of this podcast.
It is,
today.
But you know, we'll try and do it briefly, because you've hinted around this. You've hinted around higher thoughts and consciousness, you know, better consciousness and all the rest of it. So clearly there's something in that realm driving you.
Yes, we're going deep here, Howard. You know, this is, we're going off slightly at a tangent, but it's all good. You know, I wasn't intending to go here.
Well, look, David Icke, who, you know, I have a lot of time for David Icke. I've known him for years. We worked at the same radio station at different times. We worked on a radio station in Birmingham for the same person. He was years before me, but we've got that in common. David had a moment of revelation. You said you had an epiphany. Well, of course, you know that David went away to South America and something happened to him and made him a changed person. Sounds to me like you've had some kind of spiritual revelation happen.
I've not had anything happen on that kind of scale or anything as amazing as his particular story. Mine pretty much happened the way I conveyed it earlier. It was just the tail end of a long process of reading and reflecting on things. What I'm trying to get across is the fact that when you speak to a lot of spiritual mediums and past life regressionists and people that have studied spiritual traditions and ancient texts and all that sort of stuff, you get the viewpoint that before each of us incarnates into this world in physicality, in spirit form, in a higher state of consciousness, our higher selves, make the decision to come here and live the type of life that we are going to experience. And many of the details of our individual lives are predetermined in that way, because we are aspects of infinite universal consciousness, you know, the creator, the divine, whatever name you want to put on it. Because we are individuated units of that, we come to this place in physical manifestation to undergo certain experiences and to learn certain lessons, which we then take back to us, with us to the source when it's all done. And it's a case of pooling all these individual experiences and lessons that we've all learned on an individual basis back into that collective consciousness. I realize that sounds a bit far out there for anyone the first time they've come across.
Well, look, it does. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, you pick a number, a lot of people would have said this guy is off his trolley. But a lot of people are saying what you've just said.
Yes.
Today, in 2016, I mean.
Well, I completely understand why anyone encountering this information for the first time, after a lifetime of being programmed and manipulated in a certain way, would find it absolutely fantastic and unbelievable and would write me off as a lunatic straight away. But as you've said, there are a large number of people that are coming to these understandings in these times. There's something about these times in which we're living, in which people's consciousness is being awakened, and they are coming to some of these great understandings and some of this great knowledge. And the situation that I've outlined there is one that, you know, really resonates with me, and one which I've come to understand and take on board as a result of listening to a large number of authors, researchers, you know, people that have studied this subject area and have commented on it, you know, publicly through the ages. And so that's the reason why I quite clumsily before and quite awkwardly tried to get across the fact that some people are going to wake up to these great truths in our time and understand how we're all being manipulated and taken for mugs, and other people just quite simply aren't. It's not supposed to sound disparaging towards those people in any way. It's not intended to sound judgmental or elitist in any way. It's down to the fact that to a very large extent, the sort of experiences we undergo here are predetermined and pre-planned before we get here. And there could be all kinds of reasons why somebody in a higher state of consciousness might make a choice to live a life being manipulated and being controlled. There are certain lessons and certain disciplines that you can learn from a lifetime of those type of experiences that you can take away with you and which can be used for, you know, your spiritual growth beyond this life. So, you know, that's not a wasted life as such. There is value to it. And then somebody else may have made the decision to live a completely different life where they do wake up to great understanding and great truths in this, you know, lifetime. And they take away certain lessons and certain experiences learned from their life.
Okay, now listen, the one big question that we haven't asked, and I should have asked you way back at the beginning of this, but it's fine, we can chuck it in now. Because it's possibly the most important one, is we've been saying throughout this that people are being manipulated. Their minds are being controlled. The question is, to what end? Why is this? You know, my belief and your belief seem to differ, and that's fine. You know, that's why we can have a debate. Sure. I've seen parts of the entertainment industry, the media industry, where there are some people, and this is by no means all of them, this is a select number of people, who are perhaps, you know, they're out to get rich. They want to be famous. They want everybody to worship them and lord them. And that's what they're out for. And there are an awful lot of people who just are born to communicate, and we don't know why we do it, but we've just got to do our thing. And you're saying that actually there's an end to all of this, and it's not, although profit is part of it, there's a much more sinister agenda to all of that, to this control thing. So what's it for?
Unfortunately, there is, and I wish it was another way, Howard. You know, I don't do what I do. I don't say the things that I say. I don't put myself out there because it's a laugh, because it's fun. I don't do it to try and be controversial for the sake of it, even though people think that I do, and I get accused of that. I'm putting this information out there because I've come to understand that it is, unfortunately, the truth. And it's an inconvenient truth, but it's one which people really do need to pay attention to.
But those people who are controlling the media and controlling music, why do they want to do this? Why do they want a pliable populace?
Well, yeah, I'm getting onto that. The reason they do it is because those that are controlling the entertainment industry and everything else, those that control governments and the educational establishments and the military and all the big corporations, all the food and drink companies, like I say, every aspect of daily human life, ultimately, when you go far enough up the pyramid or the tree, you find that it's a very limited number of individuals operating through various organizations and secret societies. And we're talking a few thousand, probably, or tens of thousands at most, that have successfully managed to manipulate billions of other people around the planet over a vast period of time. They've done it because they're very skilled in their disciplines. They've got their stuff together, you know, so to speak, and they've done it over vast periods of time. And, you know, they're very concentrated in their efforts. And their activities are rooted in dark occult practices, basically satanic practices. And Satanism is not what a lot of people think it is. You mention Satanism to most people and their mind goes immediately to an image of the Christian devil, you know, this red devil with horns and a fork in hellfire. Satanism is not about that when you really get down to it. It's all about a mindset and a doctrine, which is all about service to self, me, 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 selfishness. It's all about just appeasing base consciousness, the human ego, the very lowest kind of form of consciousness that there is, absolutely rooted in this material plane. And because this is their mindset and this is their ideology, this is what they want for the whole of human society. And this is why they want to control everyone else. What they don't want is people waking up to their true nature, their true consciousness, and an understanding of the fact that they are aspects of the infinite, of you know, the creator. They don't want people coming to this realization, because then they would understand what power they truly do have to shape and manifest the sort of experience that they have here on Earth.
Assuming there is this kind of control freakery going on, if people did wake up in the way you want them to, how would they wrest power back?
Very good question, and the first question that most people come up with. I don't think that can ever be done by dismantling the control system that we've got brick by brick, piece by piece, because it's been going on for so long, and they've got it so locked down in so many areas of life that you would never be able to reverse engineer it, so to speak. It can only be achieved through consciousness, through raised consciousness on a massive basis. We're talking about large numbers of people around the world that need to wake up to these deceptions and wake up to their true power and raise their consciousness in accordance with each other, and to all get on the same page in terms of applying their will and intent to the sort of experience that we would all prefer to have, rather than the insanity and the madness of this very dark world that we're all experiencing now. It's a very deep one. It's not really one that you can go into in kind of, soundbite comments, but it's one that people who have maybe had their interest sparked by this might choose to do some further delving into, because it's all about raising your vibration and raising your consciousness. And when you get large numbers of people all on the same page on that basis, incredible things can be achieved. The reason we've not seen it over the course of human history is because these dark controllers have had things so absolutely locked down and going in their way that we've not been able to experience what the alternative could be. That's where we have to use our imagination and our will and imagine a better future and apply our consciousness to it. It can be achieved, as any number of researchers into this area will tell you, but it's not something that we've undergone in, you know, the course of human history. And I would say it's about time things changed.
All right, it's February, you've got the book out, you've poured it all into this book. What are you going to do next? You've said it now.
After the book?
You said what you feel about it all. Once you've done that, what can you do?
I'm learning stuff every day. I'm coming to new understandings every day. And even when you get down to the fine detail of how this deception and this manipulation that we're undergoing works, there's always new aspects to it which you can uncover. and which need to be communicated to people so that they can fully understand the nature of what's being done to us. So there's always going to be new stuff to say. My intention is to continue writing books. Actually, there is a lot of information that I was unable to get into the first volume of Musical Truth that I'd wanted to, that I now need to put into a volume two, because if I'd put all this information into the first one, it would have delayed its publication by at least another year. And I wanted it to get out there as soon as possible so that people could get access to this information. So there is going to be a volume two. That's going to tie me up for another couple of years or so. And beyond that, there's a whole load of other information that I want to convey in books as well. And one of them is going to be a novel, because there are certain things which, if you come out there and state it as something that's going on in the real world, people, as I'm sure some are listening to this, will immediately scoff at it and reject it and say that can't possibly be true. But when you put it into a work of fiction and you present it as a novel, I feel that's a great way of making some potent points and observations and getting people to reflect on certain things without them immediately attacking you and saying this sounds ridiculous. So that's a future plan as well.
No more disc jockeying.
There'll be more of that for as long as I'm able to continue it. The DJing now, I pretty much concentrate on playing old school throwback stuff, revivals, music from better years, better times, better days, better memories.
What do you like most?
Black music in all its forms, really. I like hip-hop from when times were better, the golden era, late 80s, early 90s, going up to about 1995. That output was just incredible. I like a lot of reggae music. I like a lot of soul, funk, old kind of disco sounds. So I prefer to play that stuff out. I don't want to be an outlet for the stuff that's around at the moment. There's enough kids doing that. They don't need me to add to their number. So I prefer to stick to, you know, better stuff.
Well, I knew and worked with, and you will know of, you might have met him, you might have worked with him yourself, the guy who pioneered a lot of this stuff, Mike Allen, became a talk show presenter on LBC Radio, but before that he was on Capital. I worked at both of those stations. Absolute legend. He pioneered hip-hop music in this country. He had a program called National Fresh at the back end of the 80s. And, you know, he was there when the true spirit of this kind of music was around, and we lost him recently, and he's much missed. Mark,
that's right. Yeah, he was a true trailblazer, a true pioneer for hip hop. You know, as you say, he was there at the very start of that electro hip hop sound on Capital. He did the UK Fresh Jam at Wembley in 1986, which was groundbreaking at the time. So he's definitely sadly missed.
And a nice man. You know, I just miss hearing him say, "Hello, I'm Mike Allen." We will not see his like again. Hey, Mark, thank you very much for doing this. I'm sorry some of the questions have been a bit on the hard side, but I'm trying to ask the questions.
Places, Howard. We've been some places today.
We have, and I wanted to ask the things that, you know, people who are going to email me will ask, and we've done that. Only fair for me now for you to plug the book. Where do we get it? What's it called? All the details, you know.
Yeah, the book is called Musical Truth, purely because it combines my two main interests in life, music and truth, the two things I'm passionate about. And it's going to be out very soon. It's being typeset at this moment, but I would hope that it's going to be on the streets by mid-February. It's going to be available via Amazon and various other sources. You can find out where to get hold of it from the website musicaltruthbook.com. And I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of talks around the country and overseas to help promote it. But really, all the information will be at musicaltruthbook.com. My main website is markdevlin.co.uk, and there's links there to my two podcast series. One of them is called The Sound of Freedom, and that is a showcase of conscious, meaningful music of exactly the sort I was talking about earlier, sort of stuff you don't get to hear on mainstream stations. And the other one is called Good Vibrations, which is conversation-based, much like this one, where I host it and I get a bunch of guests to come in and talk about various different subjects. So you can access all of that from my main site.
Good luck. Thank you very much, Mark. Take care. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Howard.
Okay, Mark Devlin, tell me what you thought about him. Give me your thoughts about this show or any of the shows that you heard. Any thoughts and suggestions, drop me an email. TheUnexplained.tv is the place to do that. Follow the link, and it's really, really easy. Thank you very much to Adam, my web guy at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, for his hard work on this show. Thank you very much indeed for keeping the faith and spreading the word. Please keep doing both of those things. And until next we meet here on The Unexplained, my name is Howard Hughes. I am in London. Please stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.